Rifle Coffee, baby. Pretty cool.
Great. You guys got a free fall jump.
Yeah, how that one too.
That prop wash on that C-47 is fun.
You've never gone out the side door of like a 130 or a C-5, have you?
No.
Yeah. I think it was probably going 90. You could add another 40 to 50 knots for that.
Yeah.
Your odds of spinning like Mike Sorelli are lower and lower as the airspeed goes up.
Yeah, so we just jumped out of a C-47 and getting ready for our trip to Normandy this summer. And I didn't realize that during World War II, from the wings back on the C-47s, it was all just like canvas fabric. They had no metal.
None of them?
They were all post? Some of them did, but they ran out of materials.
Oh, right. That makes sense.
And so most of those were just...
just canvas.
Soft skin.
I don't feel like I understand mechanically how that works. How the airplane doesn't just snap in half.
I know.
Well, it has the same structure and frame, right? It just does it.
What if they ran out of that material?
I mean, there's all
as
kinds
well.
Of paper airplanes. That's what.
That's true.
Not with people.
What kind of paper airplanes?
That's. Could you imagine going to war in a paper airplane?
No.
That's pretty much what they did.
I can't imagine. Were you guys thinking about that as we were like loading up the plane?
No.
You weren't thinking about like what this must have been like for guys that were going to fly across the channel and then.
I was
jump
nodding
in
off.
Comedy. Yeah, I was trying to think about it. I was really like, what did this feel like? Obviously, it's hard when you're wearing like New Balance shoes and fucking jeans, and you're like,
the Normandy jumps will be what I think about that one.
Yeah,
it's a little bit tough here.
I think we should do a night. I think do they do night jumps?
In Normandy, I don't know that they have.
I'd like to get the whole night jump in.
Yeah, I would too. And like going last year too is like, France is a little bit higher. Longitude wise, and it's like it's still really cold, like it's still the middle of spring there, and the weather was so bad last year, and that, you know, we were there June 1 to 10 or whatever it was, like the 82nd Airborne didn't even jump, and that was the sole reason that they went over there was to do a static line jump. So now on top of the fact that they're in a C-47 that's got soft skin and German flak, but it's also freezing and heavily windy conditions. That's what gets me the most about, like, you ride around in those things and they're it's like a fish and water, man. Those things are all over the place.
Yeah, looking up, looking at that plane as it's climbing to altitude, it's such an iconic outline from the black plane on the belly, and then it's obviously you're staring up at it in the clouds. It's so distinctive from a design. It's so slow and it's so big. Thinking, God, what a target. If you're on the ground shooting at it.
How many were there?
I believe.
I feel like
statistically
there
are 20. I think there are 23 miles of airplanes.
Holy fuck!
It was a constant. I read this D-Day by Stephen Ambrose last year in preparation for this, and it's really fucking good.
I mean, if one
looks
iconic,
talking about is 23 miles of airplane.
Yeah. So one looks iconic. Imagine what a sky. Littered with them would look like.
Littered.
2,000
on
D-Day.
Fuck.
Like 2,000 aircraft flying across the channel to go drop paratroopers. Like, and you think about it, no GPS, so it's all line of sight.
Maybe a radio beacon or a radar beacon.
Some of these guys are pulling gliders, so they're pulling gliders, they've got guides in gliders, they've got, you know, you're running off compass, you got altimeters and compass, you got line of sight, you're just getting the shit shot out of you. And
how many rounds do you think were shot up?
Oh my God, just in tons.
I can't I'm just thinking of logistically on the ground. Some, I mean, not that I agree with what the Germans were up to, but some poor ammo bearing bastard for hours just fucking cases of ammo to gun positions. I mean, not a dude, I mean probably hundreds of people, and all they did was just run out ammo for hours.
Yeah, the support just firing on the guys invading the beach, and from overhead the tons, thousands of tons of black shells being shot into the sky. I can't even imagine. I think that some of the best, you know, books out there, D-Day is incredible, but there, I'm sure there are more. Thinking about, it was just a line of gray ships, like stacking up, and then driving those Higgins boats, which were wood. They were wooden boats. So you're talking about the canvas, I think it was probably canvas, right? Wrapped planes. And then you've also got a landing craft that's wooden as it's dropping the gate. And then a lot of those guys weren't pulling all the way into the beach. They were dropping them short. So you've got aircraft dropping them short or long or way off course. They were speeding up, so they were increasing their speed, low altitude, way off course, turning their, you know, jumpers hit it fucking light, going green light. You've got the boats dropping ramps.
And they went at low tide too.
Yeah. And they were falling into the, like they were, some of these guys drowned just straight up from equipment.
Yeah, you really, you have to go there. You have to go to Omaha and Utah beaches to like wrap your head around the difference between high tide and low tide there, because it's like,
we're talking like hundreds of yards out.
Yeah, it's like a quarter mile difference. It's insane. And they came in low tide, like so much more ground that they had to cover on foot. And you go into the German machine gun bunkers that have just perfect enfilade down the beach.
So right.
Just perfect fields of fire to like just murder everyone. It feels like you go there and it feels like a miracle that we were able to do it.
I can't imagine, the miracle, and it's just sheer numbers.
I was gonna say it wasn't a miracle, it was literally just a volume that they couldn't hold back forever.
They brought
just it was a more math people problem,
than bullets. Yeah, you're right.
I believe I think this is accurate. Rommel was actually in charge of the defense. They brought him back from Africa. They put him in charge of the defense. And he was on vacation. He was like on a weekend trip with his kids or his family or something like that. They didn't expect it based on weather. Eisenhower had written two letters. This is how unsure that he was that they were actually going to take the beach. He had one prepared for if they did take the beach, and they had one prepared for a failed beach landing. And there are stories about Eisenhower, how he was like chain smoking and drink two or three pots of coffee. And during the planning, and I can envision this, like I think for a lot of us, this is like why I think it's so important, because you can feel it, right? You've like been in these planning sessions, you've sat in rooms, you're fucking swilling coffee down, and guys are, you know, not necessarily smoking, but they're just fucking dip cans everywhere. You've been up for fucking days trying to figure something out, and you're like, all right, and now we gotta go. So he gets a break in the weather and is like, let's go. But it wasn't great weather either. It was just a hole that they had, a small window. This guy came in and said they didn't know until right before whether or not they were gonna have to just call it off and push it again. If they pushed it again, it would have pushed them like a week or something like that.
Can you imagine the burden in that planning room, knowing the catastrophic loss of life that was about to occur?
Yeah.
And being responsible for giving the go on that. I mean, we've all done mission planning, but I have never looked at an objective that had any level of just gross consequence. Yeah. Like, I can't fathom the burden of that decision.
Failure meant catastrophic loss.
So did success.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Success was going to, yeah.
But if you don't get anybody on the beach that day, and you just straight sustain those sheer numbers, the morale that would have had, the impact on morale that would have had for Allied troops would have been astronomical. And it probably would have pushed the invasion, 6 months to like have to refit after that?
Oh, I would imagine they would have had to rebuild and then come back from a totally different position. They would have had, I mean, obviously, because then they would have refortified, you know, gone through, looked at the entire western coastline, continued to reinforce, and then you would have had to gone somewhere completely different.
Yeah.
Like, unbelievable the amount of stress that those guys must have felt. I mean, not only the guys on the ground, thinking about it from the landing craft, well, I mean, just the Navy ships that were pummeling the fucking coastline with, like, for hours, trying to soften that thing up. And the actual perspective was there was, they didn't quite understand the level of fortification. So they were thinking, just like they did in Iwo Jima, that there's no way somebody could survive after the pummeling that they would receive on the coastline. But they didn't realize that they were, you know, three stories deep in a bunker ready to support against the Allied invasion.
Right.
Like, if you could pick any position that day, what would it be?
I know what it wouldn't be, which would
probably
be
first wave, first ramp dropping.
no, like the glider. Like, oh my gosh. I just wouldn't have wanted to be in a glider. No. And my grandma was a riveteer.
Oh, seriously?
Yeah, the like factory in my hometown was a Frigidaire factory, and it got converted to a glider factory for World War II. And so my grandma was sitting there doing rivets at 17 years old for the war effort. And then last year when we came to Normandy, like you get to walk through one of the gliders, which is like 4 feet wide of soft skin. And then Rommel went through and like every open field that a glider could potentially land in, he put in even spacing like giant telephone poles. So there wasn't any good landing areas for these gliders either.
And they were trying to put it down anywhere, so then they'd have to essentially just get over something and then drive it into the ground. Even the hedgerows. Yeah. That was the other thing with the hedgerows.
Not traditionally a solid landing technique.
No. No, the gliders would have been absolutely a death trap. Because you had shit in the back, too. You had, like, jeeps and all kinds of stuff. Like, so you hit the ground, that thing is like flying towards you if it wasn't strapped in right.
Yeah.
Just the amount of sheer logistics and planning, coordination, effort, and the holes, because you've never done anything like this. Like, the world has never done anything up to this point like this. This is the largest invasion ever participated in history, the history of warfare. So nobody's ever done a coordinated effort like this. So you don't know all the holes in your game until after. So there's a percentage of accountability, or there's a percentage that this is just air. We didn't account for it. We didn't see it in the planning phase.
Right.
We just have to bump these numbers up to understand what that is.
Yeah.
I can't imagine. So if you haven't already picked up on this from a show perspective, we're down here in Palatka, Florida. We're preparing for a jump into Normandy to commemorate the 80th anniversary of the D-Day invasion. So we've been able to team up with a group of veterans, Andy, Tim Kennedy, Mike Glover, Matt, Logan, me, Jared. Like, all these guys are gonna go over there. This has been something I've wanted to do for 20 years plus. This is the 80th, which I think could be the last year that we actually get to meet a lot of these veterans. I think it's extremely
It'll be the last 10-year anniversary one for sure.
Yeah. So from a company's perspective, looking at it, how important it is to I think honor the sacrifice of the soldiers, sailors, and airmen that obviously came way before us, and the warfighter. Like, this is really important. For me, it is. Like, it's very emotional. It's something I've wanted to do for my entire adult life. I also think that it's really important to continue to call back and drive awareness to the warfighters that came between us, or before us. These guys are, there's not too many of them left. Documenting their stories, talking to them, I think it's our duty just to make sure that we're documenting and preserving a lot of their stories and the heritage of the warfighter.
Yeah. Yeah, specifically like last year out here as we were going through the course, Vince Brazza was out here,
yeah,
who was in the 101st Airborne, and he was in a replacement, so he didn't do the D-Day jump, but he came in later and fought through Bastogne. And unfortunately, he passed away shortly after D-Day last year. And just meeting that guy, like, he literally, to end the training, he talked for an hour straight about what it was like in Bastogne and what the World War II experience was like for him. And we featured that video of him, and he tanned him in last year here.
He did?
Yeah, and that's cool. And in D-Day, so... He got a hell of a last jump in, and that video of him, like, you've probably seen him before. He did the Blood on the Risers rendition
that
like exploded on the internet a few years ago. But it was really cool because, you know, you hear him talk about what it was like there to fight during World War II, but the impact that it not only has on us last year, but some of the Europeans. Because Vince was the guy on the front line during Bastogne that was, he was running back and forth with beer. Like he found a bar and he was filling his fucking helmet up with beer, and he was making shuttle runs to his guys just to like give him a little bit of beer. All these years later, this brewery started up in Belgium, and it was all based on Vince as the guy who was running back and forth. And he didn't, like, these two things were happening independently. He didn't even know that they started this brewery. And like, finally they tracked him down. Like, you're the guy? You're the guy? We based this whole brewery concept on you. And you can go to the brewery in Belgium. But it's those like little things that I think really make an impact on me. And like, we would have never been able to hear those stories from Vince if we hadn't come to do this. And it's like, no one really wants to go jump static line, but nobody. It's all this stuff that happens as a result of it.
No, I think like that's the other thing is like, nobody, I mean, I shouldn't say nobody, right? None of us technically want to jump static line. Like, there wasn't a thought when I left that I was like, I'm gonna really do another static line jump. And I didn't think about it from that context, because if I would have, I would have been like, well, yeah, of course I'm going to jump static line into Normandy. But I didn't even think that would be an option, right? Like, you know, participate in something like this, go over, get a jump on D-Day. I wasn't thinking that far ahead, but well worth the time that we have to come down here, get recertified, get a jump in. You know, a couple jumps depending on who you are, and then get over there, you know, to jump out of a Dakota. The plane, so just to give you guys context, like the plane that we jumped out of today was a plane.
Tico Bell.
What's that?
Tico Bell.
Yeah, Tico Bell.
Tico Bell.
She was a plane that went into Normandy, dropped paratroopers. The original line, the original static line that's inside the plane, which you stand up and hook up, was the same one that those guys used in World War II.
Today?
Yes. Yeah. Same one that, you know, it flew across, participated in that. It participated in Market Garden. And then it transitioned from, well, it transitioned. but then it became another service-related airplane. And then eventually it got put out into, you know, historic preservation. But just looking at that plane, thinking about the guys that did that 80 years ago is fucking incredible, man. It's so incredible. And now when we prep to go into Normandy, I think the feelings are going to be much more acute, especially because we're going to be on the ground for a couple days. We're going to be in Omaha and Utah, you know, Point de Hoc. We're going to be able to see that. I'm taking my entire family, so I'm going to be able to go out there with my kids and show them the importance of it. I don't know. Is Ree coming with you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you're taking Leah?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this is like, it's a very family specific Black Rifle Coffee trip where, you know, we get to go out and participate in something like this.
I wouldn't actually want to go without them.
No, I wouldn't either.
And I don't know if that would make sense to people, but it's been on my bucket list for years, and it's not like it's inaccessible
right
from where I live. Like, we booked our tickets today. It's two whole flights. One of them is through Charles de Gaulle, which I despise, and everybody should avoid that airport at all costs.
Yes.
They've lost more luggage for me than any other airport on the face of the earth, and are historically known to do so. So go as carry on heavy as you can. But that place, I, from an emotional perspective, I actually don't know how I'm going to handle that place.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no connection from a family lineage that I'm aware of anybody actually fighting there. But the people who fought there are 100% tied into my desire to join the military. And I would not want to go without the people that I love and care about, because my hope is that it'll give them a better understanding of who I am as a person.
Right.
I don't know if that makes sense, but to me it does. But it's a kind of a way to share not only that place, but I guess a part of what makes me tick.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Like, I think that every American should set foot in the Normandy American Cemetery at some point in their mm-hmm. life, because you can feel the gravity and the true totality of just this, like we were talking about earlier, like the sheer amount of numbers of people that had to be a part of that thing. When you look as far as you can see are perfectly aligned gravestones, and like you can't even see the end of it.
Right.
And all of a sudden you're walking, like it takes like 20 minutes to walk from one end of the thing to the other. And you really, like, you can imagine that in your mind's eye, but until you're walking amongst the gravestones in that place, it's a completely different feeling.
How do you even quantify that sacrifice? Like, if you just were to take those people and the average life expectancy, like, how many centuries of life are in just that one cemetery?
That's a good point.
Opportunity and things that could have been or that they may have wanted to do with their life, where branches of family that would have become from those individuals and kids and grandkids. How the fuck do you even quantify that?
Yeah.
I think it's also one of those things where feeling it, like feeling the weight, gravity, and significance of something like that, it helps you have a touch point with how like impactful the sacrifices that were made. Just like, I mean, you know, it's not even cliche. It's one of those things that's like the guys that paid the ultimate sacrifice so we could be here today and not speaking German or Japanese or living under a fascist dictatorship. It helps me, I think, kind of touch that something special with America that also connects me, I think, to the warfighter in a way that's like, it's something that we all share, right? It's honestly, in some cases, more powerful than DNA and just as powerful as love. It's like you can put yourself directly into the scenario. You can feel it. Like I was explaining earlier, it's like I can put myself in the Higgins boat. I can feel the spray from the cold ocean. Like you're fucking shivering. Guys are puking around you. I put myself into that scenario. And then when the fucking gunfire starts and shit starts ripping off, man, I cannot imagine like the context of that event in somebody's life. And then I think we were talking about it earlier, it's like you're just trying to fucking survive, like let alone like be combat effective and then meet and exceed the mission goals and objectives of the military. You're just like, fuck, I just need to get through this. Like, just get me through this one piece so I can get on the other side. And
well, let's say you get off the landing craft and you stripped out of your equipment because you were fucking drowning.
Yeah.
And you run up and you're hiding behind one of these obstacles that is on the beach. You're like, I survived. But you're still fucking out there by yourself as you're watching everybody else scramble to survive the physical environment and just to make it to where you are so you can even begin to formulate a military fire and maneuver exercise, assuming you can get your hands on a weapon.
It's like you're, fuck. I mean, imagine, I mean, you guys have been on ships. I've not been on a ship, but I'm like,
14 thinking about total.
The rope, right? It's like the you're just crawling down this like wet rope that's roped over the side, and the fucking boat's the cargo pitching nets. Up and down the cargo nets, and you're trying to get in this boat.
We're about that alone, to go do what?
You're what are we doing? That alone, you're like, what the fuck?
Yeah. Like, yeah. And it's probably 3 a.m, you know, and you didn't sleep at all. Like you, that's the other thing too. Is like we all know as you get older, like how you operate with no sleep versus when you get a good so night. Good. And like just you a know those sleep. Guys got no
sleep. No sleep.
No sleep. Leading up to that.
Even if they had the opportunity to do so, it'd probably be not the soundest of sleep. You know, I what's wild to me is that we had people lying about their age to participate in that. Yeah. And I just wonder if that would still occur in our modern society.
I think it would. I think it would just be a much smaller percentage. Yeah. But, you know, the corn-fed kids in the Midwest, you know, I still see that same, you know, heritage of people that did that then doing that.
I think it would too. Like it gives me hope that I think it would. But fuck. So where would you guys be? You guys never answered the question. If you could pick a place that day, where would you want to be?
Man, I don't know.
Jump.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, jump.
I think I'd be like a submarine commander in Nantucket. The boat was still being like built. I'm like,
Coast Guard.
I missed it, guys. The vessel comes on board in 2 years. No. Man,
I jump. Like, I, you know, if you had the choice.
And for clarity, it's not a choice of an awesome position and a bad position. No. It's all shades of incredibly dangerous, incredibly hazardous, bad in context of the choices, positions to choose from.
Yeah, but I can imagine, like for me at least, to be like, okay, well, you're at night, you're in an aircraft, you're jumping, and you don't have, there's flak and there's a bunch of shit happening. I'm not discounting it. I'm just saying like, you don't have a bunker that is like, this is its left and right limit, and it's all interconnected fields of fire, like interlocking fields of fire across the entire beach. As you're landing on the beach, and now you're soaking wet, maybe you got a weapon, maybe you don't have a weapon, and then you got to climb up as you're moving through gunfire and explosions, and everything else is just fucking just coming apart around you. I kind of like this thought of like, hey, they dropped me in the wrong spot. I don't know. Like
click, click,
click, click. Hey, buddy, you here? I'm here. You know? I don't know. It seems like
I would take that over plunging, overlapping, heavy machine gun fire with mortars.
Yes.
Yeah. Any day of the week and several times on Sunday.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Like the frogmen back then, and this is I don't know if this is true or not, but I seem to recall they would lube themselves up with like.
Axle grease. Axle grease.
And that's how they did the survey is like.
Well, that was for warmth.
Yeah.
Just I'm not so sure how much axle grease actually has from a thermal protective perspective.
You should try it when we're over there. We should lube you up with axle grease.
No.
Get you in the ocean.
You know who would probably be willing to do that is Mr. Kennedy. Timothy would do
that. Yeah, Tim would do that. Yeah.
We'll let's just volunteer the Green Beret for that because he would.
He's scuba certified. We'll get him.
No, he's not scubaing shit. He's going to go Jacques Cousteau mask, UDT shorts, and fucking axle grease.
Axle grease, get Tim in the water and be like, dude, do a fucking survey. I think that's a great option for Tim.
Yeah.
He'll do it. 100% he'll do it.
Yeah.
But that water's got to be 50s?
Yeah.
In June? Right?
It's freezing.
Yeah.
So cold. Like, what's the temperature in San Diego?
Depends on the year. 60s? 60s? Yeah.
So it might have been, but no, that fucking English Channel is, there's no way that's...
Yeah, I think we're comparing like apples and bowling balls, actually, between the two.
So that's the goal then. Not the goal. We'll just tell Tim he's going to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'll do it for
sure. We'll say we're all going to do it, but then only he shows up.
Yeah. No, I think
and he'll be like, oh, fuck those guys. All right, let's do it.
Yeah.
let's go. He, Tim is like a let's go kind of guy.
He's a very,
yeah.
Not as let's go as some other guys we know, but.
He would probably get lubed up and then also be like, I'm gonna redo the Bondahaw climb.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Without a ladder.
Yeah.
He'll do that. Carrying a telephone pole.
What do you think of the static line jump? You haven't done a static line jump in how many years?
What year is it? 2024.
24 years?
Yeah. It was exactly what I remembered it being.
Yeah. You did a good job. You're like covering your handle.
Only because I wanted to really, really badly pull it.
God, that would have been cool.
Spring loaded.
Yeah. Right across the top of the tail.
I have enough time around parachutes that I know they're probably going to open, and if the first one doesn't, the second one likely will. So I understand there's risk involved. It's not really a gamble, and it was just kind of cool. The whole, I mean, smaller aircraft, period specific.
Yeah.
I mean, again, I was legitimately nodding off because that's what I do in airplanes climbing to altitude, but it wasn't bad. It was a preamble to what I think we're going to be doing. That one will be hard to ignore. This one was like, okay. Like,
yeah.
I think I still remember how to do this.
Right.
Executed a PLF, parachute landing fall. It's not a big
deal. Yeah.
Partially because it wasn't coming down that fast, so I actually stopped myself halfway through. I'm like, I don't need to do this.
Yeah. I think you could have stood that up.
I could have.
Yeah.
Safety first.
Yeah.
I could have stood mine up, but I was like, yeah, it's going to look better for the camera. Yeah.
No one outranks safety.
Nobody. Yeah.
People got to know you can PLF, you know. Yeah. You gotta flex that.
Feet, knees together. I executed it all the way, right? Like all the way through. I'm surprised as to just...
Because you had jumped one of those parachutes, yeah, right?
Yeah, it's an SF-10. That's what we were jumping for the last several years. And it's a super easy parachute.
And you're coming down slower. Like, that was a slower descent rate than I think any static line parachute I've ever jumped.
Yeah.
Actually, no, I take that. No, it was 2000. I was trying to think. Yeah, we did free. We chased the boats free fall wise, not static line. No, it's a horrendous method of insertion. I mean,
it's horrible.
And he has jumped at static line altitude.
Yes,
yeah, since
sure.
then.
But
you can take
for other purposes.
Allegedly, anywhere between a 4 to 6 second delay from static line altitudes.
Allegedly.
Allegedly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you wanted to.
How many free fall jumps do you have?
I don't know. 8,500.
Okay. So enough to know the difference and understand that you like free fall better than static line.
I think anybody who has done either or both likes free fall more than static line.
Yeah.
I mean, you guys are free fall jumpers. Which one would you prefer to do on a Sunday?
The point I'm trying to make is like there's probably a lot of guys that are like, well, what's the difference, right? Which is you have a round parachute. Yep. It doesn't have any control.
Is the biggest difference.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think with your free fall experience, you jump out, you're on your own, you're flying. So, you know, this static line, obviously you're hooked into this wire inside the plane. It pulls the chute out for you. So all you're doing is you're jumping off and executing essentially, you know, a somewhat coherent position, so you're not completely fucked. And then it opens on basically on your as you exit, it's going to open, 4 seconds later, give or take, 3-4 seconds later, it opens. You have minimal steerability. Yeah. It's got a forward push of about 8 knots. And if you're going into the wind, which we were, which is about 3 to 5, you do the math on it, you're really not falling faster than about 3 knots as you hit the ground, which means it's like jumping off the back tailgate of a car. Like, that's what it is. It's not difficult. Now, if you're in the wind or if you're with the wind in that parachute, let's say it's 8 knots, now you're going 16. It can be a little bit more difficult and a little bit more spicy.
You're at the mercy of where you get out. You know, free fall, the first thing I do as I exit is I look down to check where we are in the spot.
I do.
And you just kind of look at the corner. Like, most of the time you're jumping at a drop zone, you're like, I can see the drop zone. We're going to be okay. But if you're on a long spot, you can pull higher. If you're right over the top, you could fall lower to the ground if you wanted to. So you can correct for exit position error. Static line, you get what Yahtzee throws you out the door. And if you're over the trees, it's like, well, let's see, feet and knees together, cover my face and hope for the best.
Right.
You know? Whereas in free fall, oh, hey, I'm long. I'll pull 4,000 feet higher and use my canopy to fly back because it's highly maneuverable.
Yeah. Right. One of the most fun SOPs there are for getting stuck in a tree, initiate reserve pull and begin to climb
down. Yeah, climb down your reserve.
The best one is power lines.
Yeah.
Should you be in the power lines, attempt to have an oscillation.
Yeah, to get
so you slide through them and really hope that the canopy is not touching the lines as your feet touch the ground.
Yeah.
Because your balls are going to explode like a frag grenade. I'm not sure that's actually what would happen, but
I think that should be in the brief. They should actually change that around to make that in the brief.
I remember the first time I heard that at Static Line at Fort Benning. It was, excuse me?
Is that where you went?
Yeah. Oscillate? The fuck you talking about? How about don't put me out over the goddamn power lines?
Did you climb the towers and do pull-ups? Wasn't that a thing that you guys did?
No. Oh, you're talking about the one where they dropped the parachutes?
Yeah, yeah.
They weren't using those when I was there, and I don't know why. They obviously were there before, and they, you know, the first thing they did was they put an instructor in one, and they used it, but they didn't let our class use it, and I don't know why. Maybe somebody had gotten hurt, or I don't know, maybe it was a maintenance issue, but yeah, they sent my entire Buds class to Airborne directly after Buds, which is a horrible, horrible, horrible idea.
It's a horrible idea.
Yeah. It's like, here's, you know, 20-some dudes who are 100% not going to be controllable. And if your discipline measure is 10 push-ups, we have a problem.
Yeah. 10 push-ups.
That's what it was, yeah.
You know, and the airborne shuffle, for those of you, it's like, it's like a 10-minute mile?
Probably.
Maybe? Like, we used to run it isn't lower than a 10-minute
mile. We had been running 9 miles a day just for food.
Yeah.
You know, it's a mile and a half back to the chow hall each way.
Right.
It's like, we'll be all right.
It's crazy to me that it's 3 weeks long. Still to this day, I think it's 3 weeks
long. How much time do you think you could reduce that 3 weeks of instruction down
You could to? Do it in one day.
I concur.
You could do it in one day.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. 100%. Now,
you couldn't get all 5 jumps probably in a day, but you could do all of the learning stuff.
You could do it with guys like us in one day. The problem is that it's open to the entire military. So you have, I would say, a wide variety of experiences and IQs and all these other things. So now, this is a perfect example of like aligning training around your lowest
common denominator.
It's like, yeah, it's 3 weeks long. And back in the day, it used to be a fucking grinder. Like, it was, I guess it was supposed to be brutal. They were running like 6 minute miles.
Really?
Yeah, it was, you would get your boots on, you'd wear your full fatigues, you're running a 6 minute fucking mile. Like, it was a grinder. Like, it was meant to like trip people out, because if they're gonna be airborne, that was a big deal.
Yeah.
And then as it evolved, as most things, evolve, it just kind of softened up. And I remember when I went through, it was like, there's this chick that was going through with us. She was like 100 pounds overweight. Like, there was no, like, zero doubt in my mind. I'm like, what the fuck am I doing here? Like, why are we doing this? Like, there's no chance in hell she's gonna need to be infilled through an airborne operation for anything that she might do. More appropriately, she can't. She's combat ineffective. We're actually dropping airborne troops somewhere. Like, you have to be able to like pick up your shit.
I feel like that's racist.
Yeah, probably.
You don't know every type of operation. What if they were jumping into like a hot dog eating contest?
That's true.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah. A nap contest with hot dog eating. Maybe that's the next
war. We don't know all type of combat operations that there are.
Yeah, that could be the next war that we're training for, is a hot dog eating competition and a nap competition.
I
have a great airborne story. This one's pretty good. So, first jump, I'm number two. There's a female ahead of me. Jump master gives, 1 minute, 30 seconds, like everybody's
staying
up.
At the door, yeah.
So she's at the door. He turns around to talk to somebody. She just fucking jumps out.
I'll be honest, I respect it.
It was awesome, dude.
I respect it.
It was awesome. And I'm sitting there, I'm like, were you supposed to go? I'm thinking, man, well, time to go.
Yeah.
And he turns around, like, whoa, get there! It's fucking aircraft, man. And I'm like, okay,
what did
I don't
she
know.
Out over? Because there's a lot of trees.
Oh, all trees. Nothing but a sea of trees, man. And I'm like,
oh,
I guess I'm going to wait for a minute, And then finally he like gets his shit together and gets her out.
God, but that was, damn it.
I'm number two. She's number one. Like, number one. I'm number two. I see this. And I'm like, this is one of the coolest fucking things I've ever seen, because this is like introduction to airborne, first jump, she's out. She got kicked out. And I was like, man, that seems weird. But now I understand the military a little bit more. So that black hat at the time totally fucked up.
Oh, he...
And he just completely covered it up somehow. Oh, she got past me. It's like, bro, that's your job. I don't know how you kick a student out because she bailed out on a green light when you turned your back towards her.
I was in the middle of the stick on a C-130. There was zero opportunity for me to do anything other than start moving with the chow line when it went.
Yeah.
We were just like, smack. I'm like, here we go. And we're off. First PLF was heels, back of the head. I remember laying there with just screaming head pain, thinking, I don't know if I can do four more of these. That's my first thought.
Your heels hit the back of your head?
No, heels, then back of head. Yeah. That was my PLF.
I God bless her, though, you know?
Like, yeah, I'm sure she got to come back. To be fair, there's no doubt she got to come back.
I wonder if she realized that the plane was just continuing to fly on without any other jumpers exiting.
Guaranteed. I talked to her afterwards. She's like, I don't know. I thought it was green light. You told me to stand up 30 seconds, green light. I thought I was supposed to go. I was like, dude, I don't blame you. I wouldn't have fucking gone.
Especially given you were over an ocean of trees. But yeah, I mean, you do you.
Okay, man. Yeah, let's go. Like, I wouldn't have gone. Like, I can't really say that I enjoyed that course at all. But yeah, one day you could knock it out. I think because team guys now have it condensed to a week and they have their own, right? So it's like
the accelerated free fall pipeline is now run by the Navy under the supervision of the Army, I believe. They still fall under the JFK. Yeah,
good idea.
And I think they do it all in 3 weeks. But that means static line and free fall. Right. So it's now, as you get issued your Trident, you're qualified for both, which was very different than the system that I came into.
Yeah.
You went to free fall after you had done a minimum of two platoons. Or it was just unheard of to be free fall qualified early on in your career.
And now even in the Marine Corps, the recon guys, they're like in the pipeline. They're going through free fall right after.
You know what the reality is too? Yeah. Static line is a safer way to do it. A free fall operation can be so much more dangerous than anything that you're going to do on the ground. If you actually need to get a unit on the ground in a remote location and you're not worried about overflying where you're going to be, static line is actually the way to do it. It's a safer way to do it. It's like, oh, let's just go up to 30,000 and dark it out and jump out into the ether. Okay, I have a few questions. When was the last time you've done this? Never. Oh, fuck, here we go.
you can put some guys out. Like, and I remember talking to some Vietnam vets and reading stories about those guys who do airborne school in Vietnam. Yeah. And they would do literally like 2 days.
Yeah.
You're done. You're airborne qualified. 2 days. They'd knock it out with their Montagnards or whomever they were training with. And there's just zero doubt that you could knock it out in a much more efficient manner, which is just one of the fixes that we could do.
Audience.
Oh, yeah. There's a cool, like, we're out here and there's a dog.
Just a dog just taking right a big back. Growler awesome. While looking at us. Yeah. Welcome to the show.
Yeah.
Thank you for blessing us with your number two.
What else you guys got going on? Like, what's coming up? We've obviously got Normandy. What else are you doing, Andy? And you just had surgery.
No, that was months ago.
Yeah, it seems like.
Dude, I defeated that tummy ache. I'm a tummy ache survivor. I was brave. You know, like, I took it on the chin. It is what it is.
Okay, so cool thing with Andy and the shop up in Kalispell. So this summer when you go up to the shop, he's got Montana knives.
Yep.
So you've got Aries watches, Montana knife.
Cloud defensive flashlights. We have, we're getting ready to bring in Origin USA gear.
Yeah, that's right.
Tops and bottoms, so pants. Yeah. And they're making like the pant Pete was wearing in Moab, which he then called Moab, the Moab pant, the mother of all britches.
It's good. I like that.
Yeah. So a full selection of that. We're going to try to get some of their camo in the store for hunting season. So gator sunglasses, these things I've been wearing since like the early 2000s. Why not bring in awesome brands all into one ecosystem?
Yeah.
And people can either participate or not. We have Nick Lavery's book in the store. We got Glover's book in the store. So I just wanted to be a representation of all the things that kind of make my life what it is and the people that I know and the brands that I work with. So I don't know where else you can do that and also get a killer cup of coffee.
Yeah. It's, yeah, you've created it so good. You had your first shoplifters come through not too long ago.
Yeah, but I found them. They came back and paid in full.
Oh, did they?
Yeah.
How'd you find it?
Instagram.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Yeah, he posted it. It was like,
I went and had a small conversation with him at his place of work.
Oh, no kidding.
I provided options, three of which he chose the first one. It was come back and pay in full within 60 minutes. I can get the police involved, or I'll beat the living fuck out of you right here and choke you to death with your own cock.
Yeah. That'll tend to get the right, the desired result.
He came back and paid in full and hit the 20% tip button.
Oh, good for
him. Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Sometimes there's a happy ending.
Yeah.
What do you got going on? What are you doing?
Well, you know, I'm back. It's good to be back behind the driver wheel, social media.
Running the socials again. You run a Black Rifle Coffee social.
Yeah.
You were speaking in code. You're like, what the fuck are you talking about?
I convinced him to come back and take over the Black Rifle Coffee Instagram.
All right.
And all the socials, actually. So I think, like, you know, we've gone through phases over the last couple of years where we've put people in different positions. And I think, you know, with Logan coming back into that role, it's actually, it looks, feels like home, looks better.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was like, it was like 8 years of running that thing every day. And
you just need a break.
For you?
It took like,
you just need a break.
And, well, you know, I did a lot in that 6 months I took off. I did D-Day.
Don't forget your expedition.
So you need a break from social media for a couple months.
Yeah. It's just, you know, you get burnout. Yeah. You get burnout doing anything for 8 years. So just like, we got some other people involved for a little bit and some good things, some bad things, and then came back and I did a lot in that time frame, you know?
Yeah.
Did the Normandy stuff. Went on a pretty rad elk hunt, got married, got all that stuff out of the way, and then just jumped back in.
Got all that stuff knocked out. Elk hunt, marriage, some content, you know, it's solid.
Yeah.
We're going to do another elk hunt this fall. So we've got a bunch of guys bringing in this fall into Utah. So it'll be kind of the standard group of dudes that we always do stuff with. And it'll be really interesting this year because I think the lineup is going to be more of the OG lineup too. So we'll have, you know, Mike and Andy and Logan and
headshots me. Only.
Headshots only with archery. So
we're gonna eye or ear hole. Difficult.
You can punch one of those iron wells through the nasal cavity. I found out.
Good to know. I'll put that in the log book.
That's awesome. All right.
Yeah.
So we're.
What's new with you?
You're
in a new role.
I'm in a new role, so I'm chairman. You know, I've been in that role since the beginning of the year. I've just got a lot of what I would say is projects. I'm the executive chair, and I've been working more on customer experience, really trying to tighten up any and all things customer service, cutting out customer service related customer experience. So like packaging designs, the designs on all of the product. I've done that, most of that work over the course of the last 10 years, but now I can be 100% allocated to it.
Evans Coffee subscription.
Yeah, the ECS Evans Coffee subscription. So we're in the process. We're going to rebrand some of these things so they make a little bit more sense. Sweet. And then align them around different design patterns and what I would say is coffee selections I'm really into. We've got some innovation coming down that we've been working on for the last couple of years that's big.
So you can be creative again.
Yes. I'm concentrating on being creative. I'm very concentrated on trying to plug back into what I would say is the Black Rifle Coffee core. Like, what's the heart? Get to the heart of it, plug back into that, make sure that we're constantly feeding all the customers exactly what they want. Like better coffee, better designs, better media, any and all things that they touch. So that's what I got.
Oh, yeah.
All right, from Palatka, Florida, thank you so much to the guys that have been helping us out. We'll put a tag, or we'll tag them. This is their shirt right here. It's the Round Canopy Parachute Team. It's a nonprofit, so if you guys can go out, make a donation, come out, support the organization, however you wish to support it, please do. These guys are exceptional. They create an exceptional experience.
They could actually come jump if they want to.
They can jump, yeah.
If you get a wild hair up your ass.
Yep. So come out, jump, support the organization. Thanks, guys.